Always nice to catch up with Don Baylor. It's been a while since we've had a chance to talk. Of course, he played in the major leagues for 19 seasons, six of those with the Orioles, six also with the Angels, and then played with the Athletics, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Twins. He also managed the Rockies and the Cubs, and he is the hitting coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks. You know, Don, I've known you for a long time, and when I was thinking about all you have done in the major leagues, you have been a player, you have been a manager, you have been a coach, you have been a hitting instructor. When you think about it, what is it that amazes you the most about what you've done in baseball?
I'm still around, really. You know, it's just the game really never gets old, and you always have new guys coming in. But it's the same. You know, you try to get 27 outs. You're always trying to correct somebody's swing. Those things keep you really interested in the game. You know, you see different things. Like guy says, hey, we've tried that before. You know, it's always something great when you have young players that succeed, you know, and that's kind of what teaching is. That's what coaching is. When you have your players be successful, like making an all-star team or something. So I enjoy that.
Let me ask you a perspective question and think back to when you broke into Major League Baseball. The tutoring aspect of baseball was different. There was that player, that veteran player that might take Don Baylor or any young player underneath their wing. And yet today what we've got are young players that are signing for a lot of money, having never been to the major leagues and kind of rushed to the major leagues as well. Tell me a little bit about both perspectives and what the challenges are for today's young player as compared to when Don Baylor was a young player.
Well, when I was a young player in the minor leagues, you know, you always watch the guy in front of you. You know, I had Bobby Gritch, who's a lifelong friend, and we played together a long time. And he watched my swing. I watched his swing. You know, we knew each other. We got to the big leagues, and the two guys that I had that took me under their wings is Frank and Brooks Robinson. And they were not intimidated by all means. You know, Frank, you know, got traded later on where I went to the outfield to become an everyday player. So they were not, you know, intimidated by that. So I think today's players kind of rush to the big leagues pretty quickly. I believe that's probably why you see a lot of strikeouts. You know, you play for Earl Weaver, you know, he wanted to play the three-run homer game all the time, but he really didn't like strikeouts, so you had to put the ball in play. Guys trying to shorten up today, trying to get to that point, you know, so they really kind of get crushed in the big leagues for maybe a year or two before they really find their niche as a player.
Joe Morgan said to me one time that he did not think that today's young player, because they're rushed to the major leagues, Don, is as fundamentally sound as he was, you were, and other players of your era. Would you agree with that?
Now, they talk about old school. I tell you, I look around a lot of times and I just kind of think about some of the young guys, if they could have played for Weaver, Billy Martin, Gene Mock. I you know, they would have been calling their agent every day, you know, because those guys, I mean, they just pounded on you about throwing to the wrong base. They were out there. They managed to win ball games. That's how they wanted guys out there that knew how to win ball games. So it's a lot of teaching that goes on today that we didn't have. We already had it before we stepped on the field, you know, the fundamentals part of the game.
I remember a conversation that you and I had in Colorado when you were managing there, and I've said this many times on the air, even in speeches I've given. You lamented the fact that when you would come out into the dugout, the players would get serious about preparing for the game. But you said to me when you left, you weren't quite sure what people were doing, whether they were goofing off and everything. Is it still that way? Are guys taking the preparation more seriously today than they were before? Maybe the money has something to do with that, knowing that if they prepare properly, they're going to perform better and therefore get bigger contracts.
Well, I have a guy that every day he prepares, Paul Goldsmith. I mean, he's a baseball player. You know, just looking, being around Martin Prada, I know he's a baseball player because that's what they want to do. They want to be successful. You look at Buster Posey, he wants to be successful. I mean, you see certain young players, you know that they don't prepare for the game at 12 o'clock noon that day. You know, after one game, they're really thinking about who they're going to face the next day. And so that's why some of those young guys are really, really successful.
You know, when I think of Dusty Baker, when I think of somebody like yourself, Jim Leland to some degree as well, kind of old-timers that, you know, in your particular case, you and certainly Dusty Baker, and Frank Robinson had a tough time in the early going of managing as well, because you guys had a high standard for preparation for playing the game, and I thought that you always used that standard in maybe evaluating or playing with teammates and everything. Is it hard to manage if you come from a different era when the game was played differently, the preparation was different, when you see some of the things when you're managing?
Well, it's not that you turn your head to certain things. I mean, I want to be constructive criticism. You know, certain guys maybe take it the wrong way that you're too harsh on the guys. But, you know, we're all out there trying to win ball games. You know, that's the money has changed. There's no doubt about it. The money has changed a lot. You know, we're certain guys really think that they probably deserve to be in the big leagues. I mean, we had to fight and battle to stay in the big leagues, you know, and if you're drafted a pretty high player, you know, you're going to stay in the big leagues. But, you know, Jim Leland, I mean, he's done it that way for forever. Tony La Russa has done the same thing, and it's just something that it has to be done. You know, there's certain guys that are going to do it, and there's other guys that are not going to do it. But, you know, I know how to play the game. I was taught the right way by the right people how to play the game, and I just like to pass that on.
Let me take you back to 1979, because that was such a special season for you. You led the American League with 139 RBIs, 120 runs. You also had 36 home runs and a .296 batting average, and you ended up winning the American League's MVP award. Tell me a little bit, when you reflect back on that season, how it all came together. What was it that made it so successful for you, Don, that season?
Well, it started in my training, I think, during the off season, because I finished that season 78, 34, and 99. I said, who remembers 34 and 99 RBIs? Nobody, you know, except me. And so my whole thought process that off season was to get to that 100 RBIs and to get off to a good start in April. And I had Rod Carew hit in front of me. So he really forced me to start driving in runs, because he set up the table for me a lot of times, you know. And so I got off to a great April where I drove in like 28 runs, and I was off and running, you know, just that positive thinking. May, you know, I just kept rolling, and we kept winning, and it was just one of those special, special seasons.
A lot of people, of course, remember that you got hit by an awful lot of pitches. You used to crowd the plate a little bit. Was that done by design, or what was behind that?
Depends on how I was swinging, really. I remember Andy Etchebaren always used to say when he was on the other team, do not throw inside when there's no balls and two strikes, because he's going to get hit with a pitch, okay? He's going to get on base and steal a base or something. So don't come inside. So it was a tool that I used. BGO used it the same way. I'm pretty sure Ron Hunt, all those guys that had high numbers, Pete Rose used it that way also, Frank Robinson. A lot of guys that were tough, that were not going to back down from a pitcher intimidating a hitter, you know, and that was me. You know, I got hit by Nolan Ryan a couple times too, but, you know, I was not going to be intimidated.
You've been a hitting coach for a couple of teams, Arizona and, of course, Atlanta as well. And I've always wondered about the challenge of being a hitting coach, because you go into an organization, you're getting players that have been taught one way maybe for a couple of years because they're new to the major leagues, or maybe they've been taught a certain way for a long period of time, especially a veteran who knows what they're comfortable with. What are the challenges for you and any hitting coach that comes into an organization in trying to help a player perform better with the bat?
A lot of times you have to watch, you know, and spring training, that's what I do, you know, and try to correct only if there's a flaw there and not change somebody completely. I know when I had Andres Galarraga, I mean, we talked about it. You know, when I was a coach with him, I became his manager that, you know, if he didn't change, they were going to release him. And he was willing to change, put his career on the line, put it in my hands, and you know, he took off as a hitter. You know, Chipper Jones, you know, just we talked about him being a good hitter from the right side because he was a natural right-handed hitter, and he spent so much time perfecting the left side that he forgot the right side. So that's something that we worked on every single day in spring training and even during the season. I wouldn't let him not swing right-handed during the day. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's times that he walked out of that cage and said, "God, this guy's absolutely nuts." But, you know, he hit 48 homers for us in Atlanta or something, won the MVP over there. So he believed in it, and, you know, I've had other guys do the same thing.
Do you and any hitting coach have to be careful not to get a player in a yo-yo situation? You know as well as I do, when they're scuffling a little bit and struggling, people are going to be whispering in the ear, why don't you try this, don't do this. Do you have to be careful not to get that player in a yo-yo situation to keep them steady with one particular philosophy?
If you're going to be successful, that's the way to go. With your coaches, you know, they have so much video now that I can sit down with them, and we can work it out together. But then you start listening to your attorney, you start listening to the agent, the wife, and everybody else, and next thing you know, you walk to the plate, it's no balls and two strikes, and you're in the same hole that you were 2 weeks ago. So once they start believing in you, then you'll see the change a lot of times.
We got about 90 seconds left, and one of the things I was surprised I did not know about you, that you were offered a scholarship to play football at Texas by Coach Daryl Royal, and you would have become the first African-American to play football at Texas. Tell me a little bit in about a minute and a half about that situation.
Oh, that's correct. I grew up in West Austin, so I could hear the music from University of Texas as a kid growing up all the time, so that's where I wanted to play, and I played football, baseball, basketball, but if Coach Royal would have said, "Hey, come on and play football." I don't know what he used to tell people all the time that he saved my career by not letting me play football. So, but that was that was my first love, was playing football, and enjoyed it. Baseball was was something that. I wanted to do all three sports at Texas, but he wanted me to play football only.
In about 30 seconds, what is it that continues to drive Don Baylor in this sport?
To be where the champions are at the end of the season, you know, as a coach, as a player, it's nothing like being in the playoffs are great. The World Series is even better. You know, that's what drives me, because people remember you when you're in those situations.
Don, I want to thank you very much. It's been a long time since we've talked. We'll not make it a long time once again, but you're a cherished friend. I thank you, my friend, and I'll talk to you very soon, and I hope to see you when you come through town.
All right, good luck. Thank you.
Don Baylor with us. He played 19 seasons in the major leagues, playing for the Orioles for 6 and also the Angels for 6, and then stops with the Athletics, Yankees, Red Sox, and the Twins. He also won World Series championship when he played for the Minnesota Twins and played on two other World Series teams. We continue with more of you and America's Sports Talk Show.